That was a big hit way back in 1965 for a group called the Sir Douglas Quintet. And that might sound like some proper English gents, but those guys were a little old band out of San Antonio, Texas. They had another song called Mendocino, you might remember, but pretty good group, pretty good music. My name is George Knapp. In tonight for George Norrie, my guest is another George, Georgios Tsoukalos, a producer of Ancient Aliens, the History Channel series, a very popular series. We're going to open up the phone lines. I have one more question, though, for Giorgio before we go to your calls, and it deals with a topic covered many times on this program, 2012. What happens in 2012? It's something that the Ancient Aliens series has certainly looked at, given that the subject of the Mayan calendar and that sort of topic. We'll get to that and then open up the phones with your questions right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Giorgio, people are a little nervous about 2012. I'm sure your program has looked at it. I have not seen that episode where you looked at the Mayan calendar and what it's predicting and what it means. I guess I should ask you, are you planning a big goodbye party, December 2012, or you think you're going to be here in January 2013?
It will most certainly be a big party, but it definitely will not be a goodbye party. And just to let the air out of the bag right from the beginning of this question, the only thing that we really all have to truly worry about is the huge hangover we'll all be suffering on December 22nd, 2012, and that's pretty much it. Everything else, with the whole doom and gloom ideas of 2012, the Maya themselves never predicted that the 21st of December 2012 meant the end of the world. I mean, it was basically the claim that they had was that on the 21st of December 2012, a period of time ends and a new period of time will begin. Just like at the end of each year, if you run out of your wall calendar, you run out, you go to a store, you buy yourself a new one for the following year. So the difference is that this calendar, the Mayan calendar, it's thousands of years long, but once that calendar it runs out, another calendar or another cycle of time lasting thousands of years begins again. And so all these doomsday prophecies, to me, I look at this stuff and I'm just shaking my head because, yes, I understand that, fear works and it's exciting and sensational and movies are made about it and things like that. But at the same time, it's, in my opinion, complete disinformation, and it's completely dishonest too, because, I mean, just looking at a few little facts is that the thing that, it's not even 2011 right now, because if you look at history, we went from 1 BC to 1 AD without a year zero. So right there, we're already a year off. So it's either 2012 already or it's 2010. So the whole thing, and then there's evidence that in the Middle Ages, when the monks were in charge of recording our calendar, that they made mistakes up to 5 years. So that means we're maybe off by 6 years. So it's 2005 or 2017 already. So all those things are things that I really would love, love, love for all of our audience to just mull over and think about it, and to literally take everything with a grain of salt, because a lot of people, and bless their hearts, they have to sell books, they have to sell movies, they have to sell, but in the end, everything will be fine. We'll still be here. It'll all be just good.
Is this, have you covered this already, and are you covering it again? I guess I'm asking you to tip your hand a little bit about what's coming up the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we have explored, the 2012 question, and different viewpoints obviously were presented, including the sensational ones, and that's, fine. But like I said, you should re or evaluate every idea and theory that's out there with your own brain. And as far as, some of the upcoming shows are concerned, there's one show that is, for example, is called Aliens and Epidemics, which to me is very interesting because we're exploring the ideas of where did viruses come from or bacteria? Have they really, or not have they really, but they have traveled through the vast distances of space completely unscathed. In fact, there's research out there that suggests if you send, when they sent Salmonella bacteria up to the International Space Station with the space shuttle, they determined that in a completely weightless environment, that the Salmonella strain grew. It was even stronger and bigger. It was essentially like, you know, the Incredible Hulk, that due to this being in a zero gravity environment, the Salmonella strain grew even more amazingly. So, I mean, there's all these different things that are going on in, on the bacterial and level and viruses and things like that, which, I mean, if and when viruses have come here, for all intents and purposes, those are extraterrestrials. Of course, it's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for intelligent life, you know, and, you know, humanoid life and things like that. But it's extraterrestrial nonetheless. Another episode that we're going to cover is aliens and the undead. The question, where did this idea of the undead really come from? Yeah, we've all heard about voodoo and stuff like that. But, you know, throughout history, we have these bizarre stories of people rising from the dead. And does that really happen? Is that biologically possible? Or was it somebody in, you know, who was essentially in some type of, you know, animated suspension of sleep or something, a sleep of animated suspension or whatever the heck it's called, and that they then were woken up? And whoever witnessed this, wow, that dead person just rose from the dead and things like that. So we're exploring that. And then we're looking once again at sacred places, at temples of gold, heroes and kings. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff in store that we have not yet explored in the first two seasons. So I'm very excited about, and you know, I've seen a whole bunch of episodes in their rough stages and, you know, obviously, you know, helped on the scripts and ideas and things like that. So I know that this season, if you like Cowboys and Aliens, it's only going to get better. Trust me.
Okay. We're going to the phone lines now. East of the Rockies, Dan in Manhattan. Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Can I make a short analysis and then a question?
Sure.
All right. Now, every president believes in extraterrestrials, all right? This country was based on the belief of an extraterrestrial. They trust them. It says so on our money. God apparently was the first contact. Now, here's what I want to know. Why is it that we are looking for some little gray guy when all of the evidence is there of the elephant in the room? You know, the extraterrestrial. And why don't we look at God from an extraterrestrial perspective? We seem to have gotten caught up in the religious dogma. And that's the question. Why do we do that?
Well, because the God in the religious dogma was never God, according to the ancient alien theory, that whatever we refer to as God today, and by and large, we are referred to the God in the Bible, in the Old Testament, that
he's an extraterrestrial.
Yes.
He's not from around here.
Yes, but exactly.
I don't know anybody can do that.
Right, but the worship the deity described in the Old Testament is, you know, see, personally,
we worship anybody that's smart.
Hey Dan, let Giorgio answer you. Okay,
all right, I'm sorry.
All right.
So the idea is that, you know, personally, like I alluded to before, I am a deep believer in God. And so many critics, they always try to, that are believers in God, they very quickly refer to the argument by saying, well, you know, even Albert Einstein, he believed in God. And that is true, but it's only half of the story, because when the journalist asked him, Dr. Einstein, do you believe in God? The ultimate answer was yes, but when Einstein was asked the question, he immediately replied by asking the journalist, well, before I can answer your question, we first have to establish what your definition of God is, meaning, and that's what he said, that if you, journalist, believe in the God of the Old Testament, if that is your idea of God, then I respectfully have to decline and not agree with you, meaning I do not believe in God. However, if you are referring to the order of the universe, to the fact that God does not, cast dice, then that, if we can agree that that is the definition of God, then yes, I wholeheartedly believe in God. And that is sort of the same idea that I'm trying to, tell people that, the God that I believe in is not personal. It's not where I, sit there and pray for something great to happen, because I think that we're all sort of in charge of our own destinies by, doing something by action. If somebody sits around all day, wondering when something will happen in their lives that's beneficial to them, well, I've got news for you. If you don't follow your dreams, do something, if you don't get up from your couch and just go out there and pursue your dreams and your ideas, then even God, whatever it is, will not help you just by sitting there and praying for it. So it's all action. We all have the tools within our hearts. Now, that idea that we're all part of this great all-encompassing force is, the idea what God is. So, to subscribe to the ancient alien theory does not mean that, people like me or Eric von Däniken or whatever, that we bow down or, worship extraterrestrials. Of course not, because guess what? They have the exact same questions about God and death and life and love that we have. To suggest that they all have all the answers is, in my opinion, ludicrous.
So, Dan, in other words, to suggest that the God of ancient times was actually an alien or an ET does not mean that there is no God at all.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, well, my question really was, why don't we look at it more scientifically rather than religiously, because we'll always be blocked.
Well, and that is why I really think, I think there's merit to both. There is, obviously, there's science out there. Obviously, there is a religion. There's absolutely no question about it, and I think it'll always be like this, because we, obviously, we make advances in science, and then also, a lot of people have this inner desire, the great majority, to ask the question, why are we here, where are we going, and things like that. But unfortunately, today, and we are seeing changes in this, up until today, you've had people that are either completely on the left or you have people completely on the right. But what needs to happen is what the great Buddha suggested, that the solution ultimately will come when the two extreme sides meet in the middle. It's the middle path, because neither extremes is good. But the moment science and spirituality come together in the middle, that will be the solution to all of our questions, or to most of our problems, actually.
Hey, Dan, thank you for the call. That was a good, provocative starting question. West of the Rockies, Bruce in Washington State. Hi, Bruce. How you doing?
I have a question for Giorgio, but I have a comment for you first, George, and I'll make it really quick.
Okay.
George, I want to make a recommendation that you get some UFO researchers from Turkey on your show. There's a guy named Haktin Oktagon who speaks good English. Anyways, there's been some incredible UFO sightings over there that suggest that the ancient aliens of that era have already returned. But the media has refused to really talk about it, including photographic evidence of a metallic disc hovering out over the ocean with the occupants. You can see the occupants. But here's the question for Giorgio. Going back to your episode that you did on the underground bases in Turkey, could you tell us about those underground bases and structures that you did on ancient aliens about Turkey? Because that whole area is a fascinating area.
Of course. And what you're referring to is a site called Derinkuyu. And essentially, it is this area in eastern Turkey that is known as Cappadocia. And in Cappadocia, there is this area that has this underground city, a complete underground city that goes 13 stories deep into the bedrock. And there are hundreds of rooms that have been carved out of the bedrock. And from above, when you're walking, now on top, of course, today there's a city because of the city that we, you know, we used to be underneath. But back in the day, it was a completely flat plain with absolutely nothing there. And of course, about, you know, 20, 30 miles away, you have those tuft towers, of the chimney towers, that the fairy chimneys, as they're called. Very beautiful. It's a very picturesque area. But in the area of Derinkuyu alone, it's a complete plain. It's very flat. And right there, there is this, like I said earlier, this town, this city that was able to house thousands of people a long, long time ago with air shafts that go straight into go straight up through the town or through the city to the surface. And on the few entrances that this city has, there are these giant wheels or these giant slabs made out of stone that can only be closed from the inside, not from the outside, which means that whoever built this did not want to capture somebody so that they could put somebody inside a prison and lock it from the outside, but in fact, there was somebody inside the city that did not want anyone to come inside the city. And so now that is very interesting to me because, let's say, the enemy that they would try to protect themselves from was on horseback. Well, obviously, like I said before, they had these air shafts with which the entire city was supplied with oxygen. So let's say you had somebody on horseback, all they needed to do is wait for a couple of days and see where the smoke comes out because of the fires of the, you know, food preparation in this underground city. And all they would have to do is to basically block these vents with some type of, just plug up these vents and thus suffocating the inhabitants of that city. So from a mythological standpoint, though, there are stories in the area that describe or talk about these aerial beings that used to hunt down people. So now all of a sudden, this story becomes totally different, that if you have a city that's underground, it could be suggested that the reason why it was built underground is because those people tried to protect themselves from some type of an aerial attack, something flying in the sky trying to hunt down people. And still to this day, Derinkuyu is one massive unsolved mystery.
Yeah, I saw that episode. That's a great story. Bruce, I appreciate that call. And by the way, the suggestion that we should have a show about UFOs in Turkey is a good one. Several other coast-to-coast listeners have made that suggestion to me because of recent activity. We had Farah, I don't want to mispronounce her name, on last year, but Haktan, the researcher that was mentioned, that's a good idea, and I'm going to talk to the producers about having that on. We have full phone lines, a lot of questions coming for our guest, Giorgio Tsoukalos, and we'll be getting back to those in a moment. Giorgio, how many episodes did you say you have coming this year?
16 in total, 15 to go since one already aired, and there's a lot of reruns going on, so you definitely can get your Ancient Alien fix.
How many are already shot? Are you still shooting?
Yes, we are. See, okay. That's the thing, that yes, of course, we've got the outlines, but at the same time, you know, the stuff that airs early in the season has to be shot and completed first, but we're still working on the last season, so we are in full production, and it's very exciting.
We'll go back to the phones with your questions for the producer of Ancient Aliens right after this on Coast to Coast AM. I suppose I am dating myself to say that that is my favorite Bob Seger song. I've been a Bob Seger fan for a long, long time. That one dating back to 1975, Beautiful Loser. It's a beautiful tune. And I guess I was three back then in 1975, right? The song going into the break was Paul McCartney from his first solo album after the Beatles. It was called Every Night. That's a pretty song as well. We're talking with Giorgio Tsoukalos, producer of Ancient Aliens, and every phone line is full. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can as soon as we come back here on Coast to Coast AM. Every line is full. We'll get as many of your calls as we can. First-time caller Eddie in Tennessee. Hi, Eddie. How you doing?
Hey, George. Morning to both of y'all. Love both of y'all's shows. I'm going to make this as quick as possible because, like you said, I know y'all got a bunch of people online. Are you still there?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I can't remember which tribe it was. It was either the Incas or the Mayas. They had gave a description of somebody that was supposed to have gave them the technology. And he had long white hair, long white beard, and blue eyes. I've heard on X-Aliens, y'all touched on it a little bit, and I heard it somewhere else. I can't remember where it was at. But nobody's ever went into detail about it. I mean, you know, who's he supposed to be? And that, I guess, what do you know about him?
Yeah, Eddie, I mean, that's definitely a story that I'm familiar with. And what you're referring to are the stories of the South American and Central American deity Kukulkan or Quetzalcoatl, also sometimes referred to as the flying serpent. Now, we all know that flying serpents really don't exist. And so whenever we have these stories of the flying serpents, especially with Quetzalcoatl, the reason why there is this description of this fair-haired man is because he essentially emerged out of that particular snake. And now because we know that snakes don't necessarily fly, the question once again arises, you know, is it possible that what was described here wasn't necessarily an actual flying snake, but some type of a misinterpreted machine, some type of a plane? Because if you look up in the sky and you have the contrail behind a plane that's very high up in the air, after a while, you know, the wind dissipates the contrail in many different directions. And if you have at the tip of that contrail the white or the silver fuselage of the plane, well, for all intents and purposes, if you look up to the sky, it kind of looks like a snake that's up there, you know, waving its way through through the air, through the skies. And so, you know, it's very interesting to note that, ancient people would think that these are flying snakes, which they really aren't. But once again, they didn't quite have the descriptions. I mean, the vocabulary. Now, as far as the idea or the description is concerned, that this deity was essentially this, fair-skinned guy with red hair or blonde hair and a red or a blonde beard, that to me is very interesting and quite bizarre. I really don't have an answer for you.
Gandalf. It was Gandalf.
Yes, or Thor. Who knows? You know? So, I mean, it's definitely, the descriptions exist, they're there, but it's a story that still today stumps me, and I have absolutely no problem in telling you that I have no answer, and that's fine.
Thank you, Eddie. Appreciate that question. That's a good one. On our Skype line, Bulent, I hope I'm pronouncing the name right, calling from Vancouver. Good morning.
Yes, you are, actually. You're doing a great job, George. Big fan, first-time caller. Giorgio, huge fan. Also, I'm also Turkish, since you were talking about Turkish stuff lately. Ironic. And also, my question is about multidimensional beings, and you brought that up with this first season and second season, I believe. But also, do you believe that they would be somewhat, I mean, has anything in the ancient alien theory led to you to believe that there might be some sort of time-traveling people, in essence, us, coming back in time and setting ourselves up to build the Bible with our stories? We travel back in time with something that might look like a robot, but they might see it as a three-headed dog.
Of course. Those ideas about, time travel, they come up time and again. And it's a very interesting and I think also a very valid idea and proposal. However, and there comes the big however, you see, I would surmise that, let's say, the whole time travel idea or theory is in fact correct, that
you and I, or the three of us, are able to travel back in time 10,000 years, and we construct some type of a building. And, you know, we're pretty straightforward guys. So if those people, our ancestors, ask us in the past, wow, where do you come from? How do you have all this technology? How did all this originate, and where did you get your magical powers, and how is this all, and where do you come from, and yada, yada, yada. I don't think that we would, pull on their legs or pull their leg. We would just say, well, you don't quite understand this right now, but we are actually you from the future. We're like you from the future. Now, Not unfortunately, but as far as I know, in all the research that I have done, along with David Childress and with Eric von Daniken and so on and so forth, none of us so far, and I challenge anyone to find me a reference where the ancient texts are saying that these visitors were us from the future, because the ancients did ask and, ask these visitors, where do you come from? And they never said that, we come from across the mountain or from another country or from another continent or from the other side of this world, or that we are you or we come from the future. They always say the same thing, that they came from the skies. They came from out there, the big, dark, cold, vast, as they sometimes refer to it. And that, in my opinion, is nothing else but a poetic description of deep space. So, again, the idea is most certainly valid, but I don't find any evidence for it. And so, yeah, I think it's a wonderful question, but the evidence so far speaks against the time travel idea that it wasn't us from the future, otherwise the ancient texts would say that.
Bulent, thanks very much for making that point. I guess you could also make the point that even if they were from somewhere else or the future, that it would be a lot tougher to say we're time travelers than it would be for ancient humans to grasp the idea that they came from another world or from the sky.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I am certainly not, I'm certainly not putting the nail into the coffin of that idea, because
just you haven't seen it.
Exactly.
You just haven't seen it.
And,
right.
And never say never. I mean, any option is open, and there are different opinions, and that's, that's where we all have to come together, because there are different opinions. So let's just all embrace the ideas and weigh them.
Well, I think it's important in this general field, not only ancient aliens, but current aliens, UFOs, to keep an open mind and not lock yourself into any theory.
Of course. Absolutely.
Wildcard Line, David in Connecticut. Good morning, David.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay.
Anyway, my theory is, my empathy says that we are not native to this planet, and basically this is a huge biological experiment, mm-hmm. and that's why the UFOs visit us to see what's going on. Nobody has ever come up and said, pointed out this idea. So I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
Nobody has come up with what idea?
The fact that I think that the Earth is an entirely total biological experiment, and we are visited by UFOs because they are checking up on how things are going, how, life is going, whatever.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the idea actually has been explored, and you can check out, all of our audience actually can go check out Google tonight, and all you have to do is type in zoo hypothesis, as in, going to the zoo, and then hypothesis, and then you will see that the idea, the theory has been proposed that just like we go to a zoo with our family or kids on the weekends, that this planet Earth was in fact created as one huge experiment, and ultimately it was turned into a zoo or something where extraterrestrials just visit every once in a while to check out what's going on. But so now that is to me a very interesting idea, because we quote-unquote create worlds every day in the lab.
So it just turns out, if the zoo hypothesis, of course, is correct, that the Earth is nothing else but a large, huge-scale type lab where some type of an experiment was launched hundreds of thousands, possibly even millions of years ago, and here we are today. So the idea, if you thought about this in the past, mind you, you're not alone, and that is a very, very valid argument. So I love when people think that way. So you rock. Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, David. Yeah, and a corollary to the zoo theory is my idea, the drive-in movie theory, is that humans are just so weird and interesting and entertaining that people come here in their spaceships to watch us and for entertainment and laughs.
And it sounds crazy, but let's be honest. How do we not know? How do we know that this is not true?
Yeah, or grad students writing their PhD thesis, or who knows what. Mike in Mississippi, on the Mississippi coast, on the wild card line. How you doing, Mike?
Oh, man, we're just making it down here, you know. You know, listening to all the callers and stuff and everybody's theories, man, there's 6 billion people in this world, and there's 6 billion different theories.
You go.
It's all different, and it's all interesting. But
what's yours?
It's all possible, you know, or probable, you know. My thing is, hey, you don't see a whole lot. What, 12,000 years ago, aliens had supposedly walked along with humans and Egyptians or so on and so forth. Hey, cool. It took one man, and by no means do I condone what Hitler did, but look what Hitler did. I mean, he organized and just decimated millions of Jews. I mean, what's to say that humans along 12,000 years just didn't chase aliens away? And you know, what kind of technology did we gain, and did the human race take and run with, and you know, that sort of thing. I mean, to everything else were aliens. To other animals in the zoo were aliens. You step on an ant pile, that ant pile, hey, this big human foot.
That's interesting.
We got to get rid of it, you know. So that's all I wanted to, you know, kind of say. I'll take, you know, whatever comments offline. No, I know you get a lot of people waiting in 10 minutes, but I
appreciate the call. And maybe an extension to that, what Mike is saying there is, you know, if aliens did walk among us 12,000 years ago and we don't see them walking among us now, did they give up on us?
Well, or another argument is that this one English astronomer just put forth only about 4 months ago, where he said that they might be so technologically advanced that we simply can't see them. And not just because we wouldn't recognize them the way they look, but because they have such sophisticated technology that they could, in fact, become invisible by turning on some device or something like this. Because, you know, I'm a very, you know, nuts and bolts kind of guy. So, you know, the whole idea that that extraterrestrials are amongst us, or you know, the idea that the argument is always, well, if they're here, where are they, or why can't we see them? Well, I mean, they're an advanced society, so for us to see them, I mean, they're enough scientifically or technologically advanced that us seeing them is one of their last problems that they have to worry about, because they can do that anyway. So, you know, it's a way of keeping us in the dark, I guess, or something. But, you know, for all we know is that, you know, extraterrestrials are here, but we just can't see them because they're just disguising themselves as whatever or however.
Or they're ultra-terrestrials. They don't need bodies anymore. They don't need machines. They exist in some other form.
Yes.
And we're so insignificant, they don't need to show themselves to us anymore.
Absolutely.
Terry in Melbourne, Florida. Good morning, Terry. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. Hey, Giorgio. Really enjoy your show. And you, George, I enjoy you as a host. I'd like to discuss Atlantis. I believe there was a large island that was north of Venezuela that was broken up as a result of a meteor coming from the west and creating a large trench in the Caribbean Sea. causing an overshoot of the dirt into the Atlantic Ocean. And also from Trinidad to Puerto Rico, there's a large area that that trench was created by. And I believe the meteor reflected off of the back off of the Earth, but destroyed Atlantis, and it was right there, and showing that it was in the middle of it, sort of the middle of the Atlantic. And I've been looking at this for a long time from a lot of different angles, and I'd like to get Giorgio's take on it. If he could look at Google Earth, and he could actually see what I was talking about.
Yeah, no, and I'm definitely aware of those findings. And to me, it's you never stop learning. The moment somebody says that they know everything, or that they have the answers to all the questions, or that they claim that they have the answers to everything that you're curious about, run for the hills, because nobody has all the answers. Nobody knows everything. And so, to me, all those stories that come out virtually on a daily basis, and today with the internet, it's such an amazing time that we live in, where we instantaneously can find out about those landscapes or seascapes that you just described above Venezuela, that there's always something that completely, in my opinion, for the ancient astronaut theory, it adds to the puzzle. It's another element that fits into the entire puzzle. And as we all know, we've all completed a puzzle at one point in our lives. Even the further you go along, or the further you complete the puzzle towards the end, even when the puzzle is not totally completed, you can totally already see the picture. Even though there's still a few dozen pieces that have not been placed yet. So all this stuff that goes on today, including what you just were talking about, it all adds to the puzzle, and ultimately the puzzle will be complete, and the conclusion is inescapable.
Hey, Giorgio, also on David Childress's site, he was talking about how the Nile used to go into where the Mediterranean is, and it used to be a valley there. I believe that this meteor may have caused a tidal wave, causing the flooding beyond Gibraltar and creating the Mediterranean Sea. If you look at it angular-wise, it looks like it could have been large enough and creating a large tidal wave that could have caused that flood.
Well, of course. I mean, look, there's all these different theories and ideas out there, and I think that if there's some scientific merit to them, they all they all need to be looked at. And some stuff also from, a long time ago needs to be reinvestigated, because so many times archaeologists and whatever have decided that, yes, there's this mystery is solved, we're done with this, we can pat each other on our shoulders and move on. Well, in many cases, that is really not the truth, that there still are places out there that where nothing has been answered, and that the answers that have been given so far are nothing else but patch answers, and that's it.
Terry, thanks for that call. Giorgio, thanks for being on. It's been a really interesting show. I hope I'll have you back on again, and best of luck with your season ahead for Ancient Aliens.
3 hours went by really quick, and if you want to know more, just follow me on Twitter at Tsoukalos. And it was really wonderful to be on the show with you, George, and I hope to be back with you once again.
Absolutely. It's an open invitation. Thanks very much. Thanks also to the folks there at Premier, Gina and Michelle and Lex. Also to George Norrie for having me fill in tonight. I'll be back in a couple of weeks, everyone. Have a good evening. Good night.